a piece like this is one of those classic dilemmas in that you're writing for a university orchestra with a virtuosic soloist. How do you balance the two abilities of the different musicians? Or do you?
Well, the advantage for writing for tempo is that they can play at the level of a professional orchestra. So that's not a problem.
And for you, Carol, you're used to an orchestra that can turn on a dime. This one is not the Philadelphia Orchestra, despite how complimentary Michael might be. What's different for you about the process?
Well, it's, I mean, the whole thing is different for me because I'm standing up front instead of sitting in the back and following orders. So, you know, it's just a process where we just have to figure out, like, what we want. And maybe the process takes a little longer with the student orchestra than with the Philadelphia Orchestra, but we'll get there.
And you have to learn your own piece in this case. You're not reading it, right?
Yeah, it's exciting.
I think a lot of it has to do with speed. I think that a good university orchestra can play at a very high level. It just takes them a little bit longer, that's
right.
All.
When you were writing this piece, when the commission came along, was the subject suggested to you, or is it something you came up with yourself?
One of the things about being a concert music composer as opposed to a film music composer is that you have the choice to do whatever you want. So I knew that I wanted to write a work for Carol because I'm from the University of Michigan Ann Arbor. Carol was a student there, and I knew her playing there. And then when I realized that she was also on the faculty here at Temple, when they asked me what I wanted to do, I thought, oh, of course, it'd be a perfect opportunity to write a concerto for tuba.
But based on the idea of the Mississippi, which flows, to the best of my knowledge, nowhere near Michigan or Ann Arbor.
Yeah, well, I wanted to write a piece about the Mississippi. My father passed away a couple years ago, and I remember when we were kids, we used to go to the river, and we used to camp out there at the Mississippi in Iowa. And it's just a magical place. And this summer, I went back there, and I spent a week driving from the Upper Peninsula of Iowa down to Hannibal, Missouri. I spent about five days to kind of relive of being in the Mississippi, and it's just a magical place.
So this is evoking the headwaters, the Upper Mississippi, then, rather than the one that gets the bigger press, which is the Delta, the lower part in Louisiana and Mississippi. You get down there.
Yeah, actually, yeah, we start up in Iowa and we end it down in New Orleans in the final movement.
And you can hear it. It's a big, sweeping piece at the end.
Well, it's kind of a rhythmic zydeco almost movement. I don't know. How would you characterize it, Carol?
It's got a little bit of the funk element of the New Orleans jazz band style. So it comes into a little bit of like bass playing for me. It's really fun.
Well, you know, the thing that's amazing about the tuba, and what I wanted to emphasize, is the tuba is a phenomenal instrument playing melodies. And if you look at, I looked at tuba concertos that have been written in the last 20 years or more, and what I noticed is that they never wrote a melody for the tuba. And if you look at orchestral repertoire, it's very rare the tuba gets to play a tune. So one of the things I wanted to do was to exploit the melodic capabilities of the tuba. And it's such a beautiful sound when Carol plays high. It just almost brings one to tears.
I mean, the strings and the pianos get it all, really, in terms of concertos. Not a great deal of material out there for tuba.
Not much at all.
It must be particularly good to have, not only for your instrument, but for you as well, and the advantage of having a real, live, breathing composer to discuss the work with.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, this has been an amazing experience. I think this is going to be an incredible addition to the tuba repertoire. The tuba wasn't written for as a solo instrument until about the 1950s. And even then, like, there hasn't been much that, you know, gets played more than a couple times. Basically, you've got, there's Ray Fum Williams wrote a concerto that gets played a lot. But other than that, I mean, I guess the John Williams concerto doesn't get played a whole lot, maybe on Pops concerts. But
and some transpositions of other instruments?
But, you know, all of this stuff, like, doesn't happen almost ever. So to have, like, a real piece, like a serious piece written for the tuba that is just high quality and written originally for the tuba, is going to be an amazing addition for the repertoire. Like, so all of the tuba players are going to love Michael Dougherty for writing this.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, I was also lucky because I do live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Carol likes to come back to Ann Arbor. So she came back three times during the course of when I was writing the work, and we workshopped the piece during that time. And so it's been a great experience to work with Carol and to shape the piece around what she can do, but also to try to push the boundaries of what the tuba can't do as well.
And how much about, I hate the word collaboration, because the composer typically is the creator and the the musician is the one who's usually charged with playing it, but how much back and forth can, how much suggestion do you want from the soloist as to how the piece is going to flow, for instance?
Well, I'm somebody who likes to collaborate. In almost every artistic form, collaboration, give and take between the choreographer, the dancer, the director, the actor, it's very common. Music is probably the most stilted. In chamber music, it's not that way, because chamber music musicians communicate and they talk. What about this? Let's take a little slower here. Okay. And today, Carol made it. What was the thing that you suggested today at the rehearsal to do some, to do, oh, to take out a, right.
Take out a fermata, yeah.
Right, yeah. And I said, okay, so let's try it. And it turned out to be better. Without slowing it down to keep the tempo going. So, yeah, I'm definitely open to ideas.
Tempo's been nominated for 3 Grammys for, you know, 3 of the last several pieces that have been commissioned. Do awards make any difference? Are they worth anything? Would you like to be standing on a stage in L.A. in 2 years' time?
Well, it's always nice to get an award. Actually, I met some of the people from Tempo at the Grammys because 3 years ago I received a Grammy. Actually 3 Grammys for a CD of my music with the National Symphony, and it turned out that I was there the year they were nominated, and so I actually got to go up on the stage and do my thing, get a statue, whatever, you know. They're quite heavy, the Grammys. The one thing is, you know how the Oscars keep going and going? Well, the Grammy ceremonies, they do the classical, the jazz, and the world music in the afternoon. And they give so many awards. It keeps like, okay, guys, make your speeches short. So I gave like the world's shortest speech. But then I came off the stage, actually bumped into Luis, the conductor, and the dean of Tempo when we were talking about doing this piece. So just by coincidence, we bumped into each other, so to speak. And I think it would be great. I mean, I think Tempo should have won the Grammy every year they were nominated. But I'm sure this will be a CD. I know they're going to record the piece, and I know Carol's going to give an amazing performance. So I'm sure it will be a work that the Grammy board will look at carefully, and maybe we'll be back for a 4th.